my face. So
because I also want to see them.
Yeah, of course.
And the.
Okay, then.
You know the words.
I had to come to Norway to see you.
You know most of it. And it's really going to be a ride through a couple of projects rather than
a show. So you'll be giving
it's not only about the show, but yeah,
okay.
We'll see. You'll see. When it's boring, just leave. So we really have to speak up here, huh?
Do you have the light on or off?
If it's all right for you, if it's good to see the picture, then you can have an aunt.
Looks okay.
Yeah. No.
It'll be 11:05, so I think some other people will probably turn up in the next 5 minutes. Oh dear, so introductions will allow for late comers to arrive. I'm very happy to introduce today's speaker, Susanne Jaschko, who is a curator, originally from Germany, but currently based in Amsterdam and working at the Netherlands Institute for Media Arts, which is quite a well-established organization that has existed since the 1980s. It used to be called Montevideo Time-Based Arts and has been involved in the development of artist video and artist media work throughout the last two decades. Susanne was also curator for a project in Oslo last year called Urban Interface, which was a series of public artworks in different sites around the city of Oslo, and also a conference in which I also participated. And Hans Christian was one of the artists that was featured in the Urban Interface show. Susanne has also worked with Transmedial Festival in Berlin and quite a number of other projects. Areas of interest include architecture, media art, and then, code, text, and performance. So,
thank you. Welcome. Thank you. That was a very nice introduction, I must say. So, this is about code, text, performance, language in new media. In media art, sorry. Always mix it up. And I hope this is going to work out well, because I borrowed my computer last week at the opening actually of Speaking Out Loud, the show I'm going to talk about, to the Israeli artist Omer Krieger for a performance, and since I have not been able to reset the monitor settings, so I have to look at the projection screen at some point, because I don't see what I do here on my screen. I hope nevertheless it's going to work. So thank you very much for having me here. I'm happy to speak about this topic. It is a quite fresh topic for me. I haven't worked on the subject of language in media art before exclusively. Of course, I came across, works of, and also curated a number of works into shows that I've done. Works that deal with the subject, but I took this as an opportunity, this show, Speaking Out Loud, which just opened last Friday at the Netherlands Media Institute, to delve a little bit deeper into the subject and to basically present to you a kind of survey, a quick ride through projects that I find relevant in this context, and to convey to you the essence of language-based or orientated work in this field of media art. So in the late 90s, with the widespread of communication technologies, language came again into focus of artists fascinated with the possibilities of these new media. That were computers whose functions and interfaces are largely based on language systems offered a new and exciting field for artistic exploration and experiment. And generative poetry, hypertext projects, and the creation of code as semantic and aesthetic system marked some of the major domains of the broad artistic spectrum of this time. Consequently, in 2002, the Netherlands Media Art Institute devoted a show to this broad field of artistic experimentation with language, a show that was called The Pleasure of Language. And shortly before that, Peter Weibel had curated a show in Graz, which was called, Im Buchstabenfeld, exactly. And this exhibition on the future of literature presented a quite compelling range of written language-based works, celebrating particularly interactivity and exemplifying the change of reading and writing processes devoid of paper and books. And eventually, in 2004, there was the show Poesis in Berlin at the Kulturforum, which also dealt with language in new media and tried to decipher the aesthetics of digital poetry while also focusing on subjects such as distributed authorship. It's just like to give you a kind of idea what was there before. Of course, there were also other shows, which I will refer to later, older shows and older artwork. Speaking Out Loud, the show in Amsterdam, looks at the still productive field of language-based media art from a different angle than these previous exhibitions. The show is less engrossed in the pure ability of digital technologies to visualize or even generate the dynamics of language, although some of the works, some of the works really do that in a wonderful way and show or are great examples for exactly this capacity. Speaking Out Loud focuses on the subject of language and its performative properties, and the 12 selected artworks in this show deal with the act of speaking, writing and reading, and they particularly reflect and emphasize the performative qualities of these activities and thus reveal the strong and inseparable connection between the word's meaning and their originators or sources. So the exhibition centers on the processes of both thinking out loud and speaking out, and that was recombined in the title Speaking Out Loud. And Thinking Out Loud describes the associative, dynamic, and rather uncontrolled process of simultaneously thinking and speaking about a subject at the same time. So it's really rather the process of a flow of thoughts that are uttered. We think out loud to make a suggestion, to put forward an idea, rather than to make a claim. And the show tries to advocate this free process of thinking out loud through artworks that enable, actually in a very playful and surprising way, the experience of language. I'll show you some examples later. And this happens in the show in the form of what could be summarized as experimental language exercises or canny transformations of language. The act of speaking out, on the other hand, demonstrates resistance and also the existence of different viewpoints. And as a democratic act, it constitutes really a cornerstone of the democratic society. And that, in that sense, also the exhibition, the exhibition tries to promote the idea of controversy, of dissent, and debate as a relevant society-shaping strategy. And Speaking Out Loud attempts to call for taking an active role in the debate, in the political debate. And it explores the subversive power of spoken or written text, and at the same time unmask the inflationary and culturally connoted use of words and phrases. Language is a complex and a reciprocal system, both coined by culture and also shaping culture at the same time. And even though most people today speak at least two languages with ease, only a small percentage can be called really truly multilingual, in the sense that they speak two or more languages native-like. Most speakers have a first language, which they are more elaborate than in others, and a vast variety of cultures, and here I do not only mean ethnic cultures or national cultures, but also subcultures, can exist within one cultural bigger frame, such as a nation. And these cultural differences are expressed and even established through the use and formation of language. Language is never an abstract system, not even in its most artificial form, but it's always a system of cultural multivalence and manifold semantic layers. The show tries to investigate these processes of understanding and translation of language and its cultural connotations. So when looking for references in art history, for visual works that perform language, one could really go back far into history and art history. There are precursors in the ancient world, language sign-forming images. I chose here two examples, one from the 8th century by Bonifatius, which is basically a religious poem written and drawn as an image, I would say. And a typical iconic poem from the Baroque era by Johannes Praetorius in 1672. There exists a vast history of visual schemes for written language, pictures drawn with words not only metaphorically, but as we can see here, indeed words and text that form images. I really just wanted to show you some of the examples that are out there. Maybe you haven't seen them. So, I think we will proceed now with the, quick switch to the last century, basically. Of course, the écriture automatique developed by the surrealist was a method for artistic production that is very related to this idea or the method of thinking out loud. The almost unconscious and associative flow of words and sentences holds a performative property which can be found also in the collage-like and symbolic combinations of this time of the surrealists. And last but not least, very historic example of the Dada movement, collage by John Hartfield. These kind of typographic collages, again linked to what we've seen before, these kind of iconic poetry, and if you want as well to the graphic design of the Middle Ages. And when you think, of course, of the phonetic poetry of Dada, which was based on this dissolution of words and their meaning and the articulation of sounds that remind us of a kind of unknown language, this is also very performative, very close to what we will see later in the media. So another step or another reference, I think, would be conceptual art. In the 60s and 70s of last century, artists such as Lawrence Wiener rediscovered language as a powerful system for contemporary art. He worked with language as material. And since concepts are closely bound up with language, concept art or conceptual art is a kind of art of which the material is predominantly language. And Wiener used words to make people scrutinize their understanding of them and to analyze their individual relationships to the objects in their world. And here we see a piece that he did together with Rigrid Tiruvaniya. It's called What is Set Upon the Table Sits Upon the Table, kind of mirroring technique, and another work, which I don't know its title. So, just a second. There is a strong interconnection between the generation of video artists which evolved in the 70s and 80s of last century with both fluxus and conceptual art. And I would like to show you two examples of the Netherlands Media Art Collection, a Media Art Institute collection, which illustrate this in a very interesting way. The first video that I would like to show is Primarily Speaking by Gary Hill from 1981. 83, and it's originally conceived as a 8-part installation, 8-monitor installation, and it generates a complex interrelationship between spoken words and images. Now I have to actually. In, or do we have a DVD player as well?
Just been switching things a bit so that it works on your computer. So
we can.
Easier maybe.
Can at least try.
It's connected, I think, is it? For sound? Maybe not.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Let me see. Wait for a second. Oops. Wait. I hope this is. Yeah. Of course. Okay. Central to Gary Hill's practice as an artist is the negotiation of processes that link language to the moving image, and his work reveals a fascination with the exposure of the essential relationship between language and the cognitive formation of images, with the exploration of the materialism of writing articulated through video and multimedia installations. This primary concern with the vital power of the word is located in a poetics of language that finds its fundamental expression in the incorporation of the body as an idea and ideal into the aesthetics of the text. The irony of his works is derived from the potential threat of the erasure of language within the very technologies he employs in his art making. His aesthetic investigations are based on a philosophy of language and expression that seeks to recode technology through a logos of a poetic language of imagery. And this work, primarily speaking, he considers to be one of his core works. And I will show only an extract of it. The original tape is around 19-20 minutes long. And we will watch probably like 3 minutes and something.
Should I turn
the light, please?
Yeah.
Well, you know what they say, We've all heard it before. It never ceases to amaze me. This time, it's more than just a change in the weather. They've really outdone themselves. How they ever got it past us, I don't know. In many circles, it's considered the unspeakable. These types of goings-on surface every so often. Statistically, one of us is probably involved. There's always someone willing to run the risk. At this point, though, there are no telltale signs to speak of. I wonder if the better thing to do is refrain from speculation. Hang in there, but hold back. Not get caught up in the missing link syndrome. Of course there's an ulterior motive. When is there ever not? That it's been dropped in our laps, I'm sure, is no accident. We can't just stand around, though. Where to go from here is the question. Do you have any ideas? One thing's for certain. They don't know we'll go to any length to do what has to be done. For the time being, if we can hold our own, we're bound to come across something in that near future.
Green-red, cyan, magenta, yellow, food feed them. I have the time of day.
There's no way in the world I'm gonna get framed this time around.
Chances are you're thinking along similar lines.
Stick close to me and remember.
I'll be calling the shots from now on.
If at any time I drop back,
you pick up where I left off.
If we find ourselves losing touch, here's a little piece of advice.
There can never be an eye for an eye.
There will always be a middleman
who will whisper in your ear at every turn
something to the effect of,
we can go by the book or you can eat my words.
No reason to go to such extremes.
Think little or nothing of it.
Then again,
just to be on the safe side,
better file it away for future reference.
So,
let's get on with the business at hand.
We can cover a lot of ground in the time we've allotted ourselves.
We have our choice.
Living in suspended animation,
or under the auspices of supply and demand.
Question? No. Okay. Do you want to pose questions? Now? No. Just wondered. Okay. So, although the meaning of these mostly simple, typical American sentences, this is how it is, he describes it himself, seems to be obvious. Their juxtaposition with the images gives rise to rather irritating, at times contradictory meanings. They distance themselves from their first obvious connotation to take on other meanings which change according to the image constellation against which they are framed. The words seem to turn around their own axis, and nothing is codified, and any meaning exists only as a kind of collection of ephemeral associations with other meanings. And Gary Hill's elaborate language games generate a reflexive cognitive space that awakens within the viewer the concept of an unending infinite number of possible meanings. And the other example which I would like to show is by Marina Abramović, and while Hill is apparently strongly influenced by conceptualism, the performance-based works by Marina Abramović of the 70s were really close to the Fluxus practice. And in 1976, when she made this performance and video work that I'm going to show, she just had left Serbia, Croatia, Belgrade, and relocated to Amsterdam, where she had met Ulay, and with whom she then started to work and live. And that's the actual situation and moment when she recorded the performance. So, let me show this to you. It's also only an extract again. The original performance took 1.5 hours, and she has edited this material in a couple of versions, and the one I'm going to show here is a 20 minutes version, of which I'm only going to show a couple of minutes, so that the concept becomes clear.
Bujica, mladež, mikser, gnoj, usta, zubi. Belnjača, gleđ, opucalo, gangrena, sluzi, vložnost, uvo. Ušna duplja, žuto, mast, vrat, bore, suvo, grudi, bradavica, stomak, pupak, crevo, srce, pluća, jedne, ždrelo, vene, kucati, noge, čmar, nokat, stopala, cipele, peta, rahitis, tuberkuloza, epidemija, lepra, grip, prehlada, koračati, soba, linoleum, stolica, fotelja, ligišta, vrata, bronza, kvaka, metal, mladež, ključ, zid, ugao, linija, til, organdin, tropikal, zavesa, grombi, škure, roletne, labirint, kvadrat, kandinski, crno, belo, video, son, sanje, koža, plastika, presvučen, sat, žila kuckavica, papagaj, štoperica, sekund, minut, skazaljka, rajfešus, metal, na kopče, pregrada, ostala, slatka mermelada, kuhinja, ključevi, nož, drška, hleb, musak.
See if I can fast forward a bit. It's not a good idea. Okay, let's see. I can go. This actually. Okay.
Bubuljice, mladež, mikser, gnoj,
okay.
Usta.
I just wanted to fast forward to the end, but it's... I'm missing the bar. Where's the bar? It's gone. Okay, so... Okay, so we can't go to the end. It doesn't really matter. Thank you for the light. So, in this performance and video called The Freeing of Memory, Marina Abramović reels off all the words that she can possibly remember in this kind of exercise. She speaks Serbo-Croatian, and at some points she throws in also English and Dutch works, words.
Which language was it?
Serbo-Croatian. And by reciting all the words stored in her memory, she tries to free herself from the acquired language and to purify herself. At that time, she drew inspiration from Eastern philosophies and especially from rituals and ceremonies that aimed at a higher level of consciousness to find a harmonious balance between mind and body. And to accomplish this, the mind has first to be drained of thought. So after 1.5 hours, she then seemed to have succeeded, and the well of words slowly dries up, and the performance is over. And freeing the memory is part of a series which she did around that time, a series of performances in which she tried to purify her body and mind. And attempted to switch off her consciousness. And there was actually a work which was somehow related to the famous performances by Abramović and Ulay they did in the 70s and 80s, which unfortunately I didn't bring. I just discovered by preparing this talk that this might have been a good work to show to you as well, so I just have to explain this to you. It's actually a work by Tib Etchells and Vlatka Horvat. And Vlatka Horvat is a performance artist, and Tib Etchells is an artist working with Force Entertainment in the UK, a group that works a lot with new media. And they underwent a kind of language exercise in that they positioned themselves in front of a video camera for 1 hour, and they basically mutually started to praise each other. Everyone contributes a sentence or a statement about the other. So this is a game that goes back and forth between the two. And at some point, the whole thing switches, it turns, and they start to insult each other. And although it becomes quite clear that this is just a language exercise, that they refer to each other's statements by using almost the same phrases, but then extending them or changing them. It is interesting what happens, because although this is a kind of abstract exercise, of course it has reverberations on a very personal level. There seems to be apparently a relationship between the two. And they cannot really completely distance themselves from the meaning in the moment they talk to each other. Yeah, so... Unfortunately, I just can't describe this to you.
What was the title of the work?
Hmm?
What was the
Insults and Praises from 2003.
Okay, and who were the artists?
Mm-hmm.
Who were the artists?
Tim Etchells and Vlatka Horvat. Right, it's not underneath that slide. Missed that. So, let's shift to work with computer, language-based work with computer, in contrast to video, a purely time-based and linear medium. The standalone or network computer has been explored and employed to generate text, of course, I'll go into that later. Create text on the basis of distributed or shared authorship, to interact with text, for example, through hypertext, on the basis of hypertext, to create new language or language signs, and to perform and or organize text in a sonic or visual way or audiovisual way. So I'm going to show some examples for each of these categories, so to say, that hopefully illustrate what I'm going to say. Let's first talk about the generation of text. The genesis of digitally generated poetry lies in the sphere of experimental poetry in Europe, and particularly already in late 1950s, actually, in Stuttgart, where Max Benze started working on a poetic machine aesthetics. And then Theo Lutz in 1959 actually produced the first stochastic and artificial text written on the Zuse 22 mainframe computer. And that at that time was a quite isolated and very experimental research, and the results of these experiments and the actual processes in the machine were given less significance than the question as how to interpret autonomic text generation with respect to its aesthetic functions, such as relative to the creativity of a human author. I don't have an example for this, unfortunately. But what I have an example for the second category, the creation of text on the basis of distributed or shared authorship. And maybe, I hope, that I can go to the internet now. Let's see if it works out. Bookmarks, sorry, no. Here we go. I don't want to go there. But to... Oh, yeah, this is actually where I want to go, but okay. So, Roy Iscott was one of the first to initiate a project with shared authorship, as least I think that he was one of the first ones, with his project La Plissure du Texte, the plate or the fold of text, in 1983. He refers to it as a collaborative storytelling project in which he invited artists from Europe, North America and Australia to supply text that flowed together in the Artext computer network. And this was on the occasion of a show called Electra 1983 at the Musée d'Art Moderne de la Ville de Paris, which tried to give a survey of the use of electricity in art. And Roy Ascott was invited to propose a work, and the work La Plissure du Texte was the one that he came up with. So what he did basically is he invited artists and groups of artists to participate in this project. He posted a description of the project and a call for participation on this specific Artex computer network. And artists and groups in 11 cities agreed to join the project. And then in November, each of the participants was allocated the role of a traditional fairy tale character, like princess, witch, godmother, prince, and so on and so on. And the concept was basically to create a kind of non-linear story together in collaboration. And the contributors were asked to improvise and to respond to each other's text in some way or the other. And the result was that due to the difference between time zones and the nature of improvisation, the narrative often overlapped and was fragmented. And also, unfortunately, not the whole story was actually archived and stored, but only fractions of it are now still accessible and visible. So here's a little bit of it. I just scroll a little bit down so you have a rough idea.
Can you explain it? So how was it fed, the text?
Well, it was basically sent back. So it was nothing but just a written text that was sent back and then distributed through the network. So basically, every group in the network that participated got the new text, got whatever was written, and they could somehow respond to this in some way. But unfortunately, because of they don't know why, but not every group really received the full text. So that's what I tried to say, that it was really fragmented. It didn't work out like completely. And that's why text is overlaps, and it's really non-linear in that sense. So you sometimes really miss bits and pieces of the story. So this is still the introduction and so on and so on. And blah, blah, blah. So, blah, blah, blah. So, now, where do we go? Yeah, this is still the very beginning. That's part of the project. They all talk to each other and basically try to tell each other what is going on and how they do it. And then at some point the whole story starts. Yeah. So here we have the first piece of text, so to say. That is then taken further. And it actually was in French and in English. So that was the only limitation, so to say, that you had to use either French or English. Yeah, just to give you an idea. And go back to the presentation. Yeah, you have the link if you're interested. Since the mid-1960s, the narrative strategy of hypertext in art has been a topic of discourse. And Theodore Nelson, who coined the term hypertext as early as in 1965, had since the 1970s pursued the idea of developing software that, like a library of Babel, would be able to manage all forms of writing and would make it possible for the user, whenever he or she reached a point in the text requiring further clarification, to immediately call upon the appropriate note. And Nelson defines hypertext as non-sequential writing, text that branches and allows choices to the reader best read at an interactive screen. So hypertext is in its core nonlinear text that is interlinked with other elements such as, for example, text, animation, images, film, or sound. And the author becomes a co-editor and sometimes even a co-author, deciding which path to follow on the of the non-linear narrative, which hyperlinks to follow, which elements to read, watch, and consume. And one of the well-known projects of well, hypertext, using hypertext structure, is Grammatron by Mark America, I think from 1998 or 97. And I tried to access it yesterday, and I wasn't able. I don't know why. Let's try it again. Oh, here we go, sorry. Maybe it's possible to see it now. Hope. Let's wait. What happens? So. One point is laughing. Yes. Netscape. Well, that it might be the problem. Although it displays here. Well. Who uses Netscape? Let's see what happens.
The control on alternate art.
Yeah, that's another. That's really.
In those days, Netscape was cool.
I know. I use Netscape. Now I'm using Firefox. I should probably use. Whew. No. Okay. I don't know what's happening here. Unfortunately, would have been nice to show you, because this is really, one of the.
Yeah.
Sorry, one of the really, I think quite interesting works of hypertext, and it's really huge in that it consists of 1,100 text spaces, like 2,000 links, 40 minutes of audio, let me see, and a virtual gallery featuring scores of animated and still life images. But maybe then it's for you to explore this at home. Maybe you get further than this. But I can show you another work which also is based on a hypertext structure, and which I showed in 2002 at the Transmediale exhibition. And it's a piece by Peter Fucht, a Hungarian-German artist. And that piece, in that piece, live chat conversations are monitored in real time and then visually presented in a 3D virtual environment. And a language synthesizer with a permanently changing voice recites these live chat dialogues out loud. So I guess I'm going to show you this then instead. And I have a nice documentation. You see? I think it's already there. Yeah.
Live chat conversations are eavesdropped upon and then visually presented in a 3D virtual environment as a language synthesizer with a permanently changing voice recites chat dialogues out loud. It is possible to navigate between texts, pass through them, and to observe them from all sides. When the text is selected, it turns red. If a second text is selected, it merges with the previously selected text, whereby a typographically and structurally altered version of the text results. The selected texts are simultaneously recited during this time. Poetry applies linguistic terms like hyperbola, anaphora, metaphor, ellipse, etc., in order to evoke a mood, in order to make something clear and more attractive. In general, words are used in an onomatopoetic and rhythmic order. My textures, or text images, don't aim to express anything specific, even when some of the word combinations are called linguistic terms, and also when associations with other word combinations are made. There are other processes at work here, on the spoken level agents, algorithms, like permutation, alphabetical order, etc. on the graphical level before parameters of font type, size, position and scaling, which words join in the installation, and which combinations they form, can't be known. The only given is that the masses have spoken, or rather typed, these words. My experience of past projects of machine communication, like those made possible through LISA, show that people quickly become obscene when they are dissatisfied with a response. They are very creative with using interesting variations of vulgar expressions.
Clear? Ja?
Who's the artist?
Hm?
The artist?
Peter Frucht.
And what, so, sorry to go into the technical thing,
yeah.
So it's reading from some script, and I see URLs or something.
No, you didn't see the URLs, really. That was a bit misleading in this video.
Okay.
It was, you don't see them. What you see is basically, excerpts of text, like from online live chats, various online live chats. So there's the system actually grabs these texts and displays them in this kind of 3D virtual environment. You look into that black space basically, and then you have these kind of boards of text or panels of text. Through which you can navigate and which you actually actively can choose, but it's a weird it's interactive, but at the same time it doesn't necessarily read the text that you activate immediately. So it's kind of there's a kind of there's time in between, so you have to wait. There's a lag. Yeah, that's what I was looking for exactly. So yeah, that's what it does.
And has he given certain queries to go through those chats, or are they straight feeding in?
They're straight feeding in.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. That is also, I mean, displaying this work today would surely be, he would have to make an updated version. Because the chat that he was monitoring in 2001 and 2 are probably not there anymore. And it was also chats in different languages. So it was not only English, but various chat forms using different languages. So here we are. So the other group of works dealing with language focus on the creation of new languages or language signs, mainly through generative processes. Artists have been busy with developing new languages, very often producing cryptic or abstract language systems, you could say, or or end exploring multi-layered notions and connotations of language. Jodi, for example, a Netherlands-based artist group, they are well known for their renunciation of the ordinary communication style, introducing an individual writing style in their communication, not only in their email communication. And I brought an example of actually now the Speaking Out Loud show, which is the work Semiotic Collider by the German artist Michael Höpfel. Höpfel is also one of the members of MESO from Frankfurt. Within MESO he deals basically with visuals and graphics. The interactive Semiotic Collider shows different populations of signs which can be accelerated to interfere with the screen's frequency and to breed a whole zoo of signs every time they permeate each other. And I brought material which was shot at the opening of Speaking Out Loud. So this is not very edited. It's actually not edited at all. And I will show an extract. Try again. I don't know what this is. Okay. Go from here. Oh no! Didn't want that. Or maybe this works. Ooh. Too bad. Well, it worked before. Tried it on VCL another time. With this real player, always have problems.
Do you want to try the DVD player instead?
Yeah, let's first try to... I don't know what's wrong here. Can we try one more time here? Let's see. Okay. No. I don't know. Okay, let's try it from the DVD player. Stop. Okay. Number two. really worked flawlessly before. Okay.
Really? Well, just fast forward a little bit, maybe.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
Maybe it works over. It stops completely. It doesn't respond at all.
Yeah, because they have created microparticles. It's a simulation system with gravity and some magnetic force and so on. And with this, you get some behavior.
Okay.
Yeah, they shape science or something like proto-science.
Yeah.
You can look at them and find out what makes sense to you and what not.
Yeah.
It's like finding out if an algorithm can create a sense in some way.
Okay.
And so in this machine, you let them collide,
yeah.
Accelerate them, let them collide, and get new science from parts of science. It's like treating the science like little particles.
So that was Michael Höpfel himself trying to explain his work to one of the visitors. But I think I'm going to try to explain it to you again. So the semiotic collider runs in infinitive generative mutation processes of structures which more or less resemble characters. And they are generated by an algorithm that stimulates force fields as an environment of a particle cloud. In this process, the structures constantly mutate and undergo transformations and recombinations of their components. Let's switch. We have to switch again. So, just as organisms exchange genetic material, these protocytes pass components onto their neighbors and affect each other's development. And depending on the cultural background of the spectator, he or she may find meaning encoded in singular structures, thus drawing an individual line between connotation and pure coincidence. And actually, it's quite interesting. This is, for example, also part of the piece. This is a kind of still. So he also produced these kind of still images. In that case, it's actually engraved into a platina. What is a platina in English? I don't know exactly. Does anyone?
Circuit board, was it?
Huh?
Was that the circuit board one?
Yeah, a circuit board. Thank you. A circuit board. And also part of his installation was a printout of a still, basically, of generated signs. And it was interesting that, of course, like Arabic people or people using the Arabic language and sign system, and also Chinese people, they could actually very much connect to this, to these kind of new, newly generated, sign language or characters. So that is one of the examples. That's another example for the creation of language, but in a completely different way, is the work of Mess, the Australian artist Mary Ann Breeze. She created a language of her own. It's a self-invented language which she called Mesangel, and which is primarily based on hybrid words. And it appeared first 1994-95 on multi-user dungeons. And it dissects and recombines language and stacks multiple layers of meanings into single phrases. Beyond that, it is an internet cultural poetic language deriving much of its tension from incorporating formal code and informal speech at once. In a way, it its construction qualifies as hypertext, but not, of course, on a code or software level, but rather on a morphological and grammatical level. It is not synthetically fixed, and it's in its continuous, basically in a continuous artistic development. And it mixes English, ASCII art, fragments from programming language, source code, markup language, regular expressions and wildcard patterns, protocol code, emoticons, phonetic spellings, and slang. In that it is a very polysemic, multi-layered language that remixes the basic structure of English with all these elements through the manipulation of syllables and morphemes. And in that it is also related to the code work of Jodi, Natochka Nesvanova, and others, just to name a few. And through its semantic and syntactical layering, Metzengel achieves an aesthetic effect of altering words and letters from discrete digital units into fluid, quasi analog information. And this fluidity and flow corresponds to its artistic use predominantly in email postings on mailing lists. And here's just an example. And I won't go very much into detail, just pointing you to a couple of these phrases that she's using and trying to decipher them, or at least pointing to the multi-layered semiotic meaning of these phrases. For example, you read here moduling 1.1, and it reads basically as a name of a computer program with a version number, and through its pointed and bracketed word fragments it expands just like running software into the words module and dual and dueling. And the syntactical notation is taken from wildcards and regular expressions in programming languages and the Unix command line interpreters forming this archetypal world. And further down you see executable or cut-able statements. Here, of course, as I already tried to pronounce this word or this phrase consists of execute or executable, cut up and able, and further down you have, for example, programmer, which is a combination of programmer, grammar, program, and gram. So you can see that this simultaneous contraction and expansion, regularity and irregularity, instruction and chaos in these words, like a piece of software code that gets executed, the writing expands far beyond itself, generating dozens to hundreds of possible readings. Surely the biggest group of artworks dealing with language or being language orientated is works that perform text in a sonic, visual or audiovisual manner. And I hope now that this works again. I don't know, shall we try again to
take a look?
Yeah. It's really weird, I must say, because of the child centers.
DVDs are horrible things, they're very unreliable.
Yeah, here it is. So, first select, play. Yeah, but it doesn't have sound.
Okay.
The sound is not relevant here. What you will probably hear is the talking of the visitors. This is a piece which was shown in Speaking Out Loud, and it's by the British artist Charles Sanderson. Piece from 2002 called Good and Evil. And Charles Sanderson is well known for his spatial installations and of language-based projections. And the inability of art to communicate is often the subject of his art. And he creates these simply crafted and seductive spaces which are independent from the viewer, and that the viewer and the artwork move alongside each other on equal terms. And he usually fills like the entire rooms with projections, really creates a kind of complete surrounding environment with projection, with the projection of words and phrases. The simple use of text undervalues the raw processing power of the modern computer here. His technique is to paint with light, time, and elemental characters. And the installation presented in Speaking Out Loud features these two words, good and evil. Well, you would see them if we come closer, which we do now. It's really bad resolution here. I don't know why. It will even zoom in more, so we will see. So the evil words are red, blood red actually, whereas the yes, stuck again, whereas the white words say good. And what happens basically is that these words are fighting against each other. So they basically possess the same attributes, both words, good and bad, and have exactly the same goal, which is to occupy all the given space and to eliminate their opposite. So equally, the desire to eliminate the other requires them to colonize all available space. And the words move in opposition to each other. They organize themselves into columns of attack and lines of defense, really. The words are animated using similar structures as, or similar generative structures then encodes similar to basically microorganisms or cancerous cells. Okay, that was it. And the words really slowly flow across the space and spread out into the darkness of the room. And it's a constant movement and constant fight going on between the words. So, of course, this work was made in 2002. And it is definitely a political work. You know, in the aftermath of 9/11 and the use of the word evil and good at that time, and of course the use of even the phrase of the excess of evil. How are we doing time-wise?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. Okay. I think then I'll try to. I skipped one work which I wanted to show, which was also in Speaking Out Loud, but rather go to, let me see, oh yeah, okay, I don't have a slide for that, to a work that is basically not fitting into any of these categories which I just tried to describe, but is a work that on the one hand, again, is based on the generation of words, but the poetic quality here is not the goal of the project, but rather the subversive power of language. And it's an artwork that was developed by Linda Hilfling, who is a Danish artist currently in residence at the Netherlands Media Institute. And it's an older work of hers called The Misspelling Generator. Let's see if we can go there now. Yeah. I have to do this like this. Yeah. I hope it's working now. Let's wait. What happens? So, the misspelling generator is called. What it is basically is an extension of the Firefox engine and a kind of add-on to the Google search engine. And of course, when you use the Google search engine, you usually get suggestions for, you know, if you misspelled something, for the right spelling of the word. And this is actually the other way around. The misspelling generator, if you download it, it onto your computer, it will, when you use Google, actually suggest words that are misspelled. And it is actually a kind of, it taps into this kind of gray zone of misspellings is basically a tool to find information on the internet that you would usually not find. And misspellings have been used since the existence of the internet, also to circumvent censorship in order to hide information or to basically make information only accessible to people who know where to find it. And this is basically a kind of art tool that tries to give you access to all these misspellings and to show you this kind of alternative side of the internet. And unfortunately, again, I had problems before. Let's see, now it's doing something. It should actually generate misspellings for Kunsthochschulen. I tried it on that. But it doesn't do it necessarily. Well, otherwise, I still have another short DVD that explains it and shows it. I know. No, it doesn't work, really. I don't know what's wrong. I tried to find out, but... Oh. That is not true, actually. Because I tried it before, and there were, like, really a lot of misspellings. Okay, maybe try something else. It's really weird. What shall we try? Let's try that.
What was her name, the artist?
Oop! What does it say? I have never seen that.
The search resembles suspicious activity of a viral network.
Oh my god! Okay. So something happened in between. Google.
This is a problem with Google Work. I've experienced it myself. Is that Google is clever in terms of
yeah, it is exactly yeah.
Keep.
But it's really interesting because before I used it like yesterday. I downloaded the program and I tried it a couple of times, and it was actually producing these misspellings. But apparently, I was discovered already. Mm. Like this program was discovered on my computer, so I get this error message now. So I cannot use it anymore, which is really weird. Okay, anyways. Shall I show you the DVD instead? Do we still have time? I mean, maybe 5 minutes or so. Because I think it's a really interesting and nice project. Let's see, maybe this works now, yeah.
Maybe
it was just your name. Are you being stalked by the CIA? Could well be. Oh my god. I don't know what's wrong. Yeah. That's indeed very weird. Okay. Now, something happened. It still doesn't tell me. Go to fast speed, exactly. So it's again kind of describing what I tried to say, but showing you how it is usually used, or how you can use this. As you could say, accessible and useful, universally. So there's now the right spelling, and what you get here are images actually of this kind of action that took place. I don't know exactly when it was that there was this incident on the Red Square in China, which then kind of was not really, there was censorship actually taking place. And this is what you get, you know, when you use the Chinese version, kind of censored pictures and no information on the incident. And that happens when you misspell it. Now this is how you should work. Yeah, these are now, for example, when you use the misspelling generator, let's go back again, get all these misspellings and can actually go to the list by clicking on them and go to these hits basically directly. And even scroll over them and see like how many misspellings actually are there on the internet. Okay, so this is it basically.
What was the artist's name?
Linda Hilfling. So I'm coming to the end. Well, is there a conclusion? I don't think that there is a conclusion, really, because it's this kind of work is really based on an ongoing fascination with language in the arts, particularly in the visual arts, And because language is a system that is ever-changing and dynamically developing, and on the other hand, comes with a quite rigid set of rules in order to guarantee a common understanding, it is this ambivalence, that kind of soil on which language-based visual art grows. And within new media and electronic art, we can definitely see a certain obsession with language, well, basically due to the fact that, of course, a lot of these machines are still based on language, like programming is, software, the major interfaces are, and also computerized activities are. So it's quite natural that within those media, or with the help of those media, you respond to language, and you can even kind of perform language and its dynamic qualities. And finally, it's also maybe another quality that language and digital art share, their volatileness and their temporality. And renowned novelist Paul Auster captured the act of speaking as when words come out, fly into the air, live for a moment and die. Strange, is it not? And when you look at the works that I presented, of which many are actually based on specific versions of software, or based on, you know, the web, the internet, hypertext structures and so on, it's apparent that these works will decay, and they will get lost. Hypertext structures will get lost, links, the software will definitely at some point not be transferable anymore, so that code. So it's basically due to this speed and nature of technical development and the dynamics of the internet that a huge number of these works are also ephemeral and will not live on. Now, I showed you a lot of works, and I tried to give you a kind of survey of what is out there. I didn't show you everything. I had to really skip a lot of things, like, for example, generative poetry or electronic poetry. But I hope I could give you some idea of what is out there. Do you have questions?
The show that you just curated in Amsterdam, is there information about that on the website?
It is, it is. There is on the NIMCA website, there's information. There should also be the catalogue, which is a little booklet, basically, downloadable PDF catalogue. I brought some copies, so I don't know if I brought enough, but maybe you're interested. Then you can just get one of those. But as I said before, this should be also available on the internet. Yeah. But of course, like the works that I showed, only a couple of them were in the show. It was much broader.
I wasn't familiar with the Auster quote, but it's a beautiful quote, because I was thinking about Mes Breeze and how Mes's texts are just, in the early days of bliss culture, it was always excellent to get Mes's post, you know? And now it seems like there's a completely different environment. You know, list culture is not what it once was, and now that language, even if she puts in her Facebook status, tiny, let's say, bits of Mes, it feels out of context,
more
like a signature, less like a language, you know?
Yeah.
And so it is true, they live for a moment and die. You know, that was a very text-based internet,
yes,
where she could produce those amazing pieces.
Yeah.
I was wondering what happened to her, because I used to receive a lot of those things, and I haven't seen them for quite a while.
She's really gone much more into like Second Life. She's really productive, but it's a different thing.
It's a different thing, yeah. She uses other platforms now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, it is a very, I don't know, not zeitgeist, but stuff at least within a short time frame that these things work and live and convey themselves to each other. But
even the curatorial challenges of how would you show that work now and have the context of a text-based internet, you know, to convey that, it's difficult.
Very much. It's with a lot of these works, it is quite difficult to show this, like within a kind of traditional exhibition. And what I also discovered with this show is, of course, you need a lot of time. You know, you have works in this show that, you know, last like 60 minutes. You have other works that you have to read and try out, and it's a time-consuming work and time-consuming show. And it really is not for the ordinary, you know, art consumer, so to say. That makes it difficult also to exhibit this work, not only because it's time consuming, but also you also have to find, you know, interesting ways of displaying the work. And yeah, makes it not easy.
You didn't refer to, for example, Jenny Holtz's electronic sign works and those kinds of public textual art. Do you consider that to be something other than the kind of work that you're interested in here?
No, not necessarily, but I mean, I see her work, of course it's language-based, but more like, I think it's predominantly political, and it's using this, well, language as a source, basically. And if you, for example, think of the thing that she did in Bregenz, where she projected formerly classified documents of the CIA, basically, and other agencies onto the Kunsthaus. It's very much about publishing information publishing information and showing information to a broader audience. That's how I see her work, rather than being really interested in the kind of the language itself. Maybe you don't think that this is true, but it's the way I perceive it. Yeah. Any other questions? Please. No.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you then for your attention.
Thank you.